Doug Ford's government extends emergency orders until December 1st. Apparently, no election in Canada until after the pandemic. And caring for Canadians, unemployment climbs to 8.2%.
Ladies and gentlemen, we may be approaching a fateful hour.
Bonhoeffer spoke by radio to a national audience. He delivered one of the first public criticisms of the new chancellor.
Never give in. Never, never, never. In nothing, great or small, large or petty, never give in except to convictions of honor and good sense.
Welcome to Liberty Dispatch, broadcasting across enemy lines into the Canadian culture war. We are back in the studio. Thanks for joining us on the show today. We've been away for a week and a half. Thank you for being patient. We're glad you're with us once again. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel, Liberty Coalition Canada. Please subscribe to the podcast, Liberty Dispatch, at iTunes or Spotify or Podbean. We are so glad so many of you have. Please give us a 5-star rating and share the show. That helps us quite a bit as well, and we are super thankful for all the support we have got from you, our dear listener and viewer. Something brand new we want to bring to you. You may have already seen this if you follow the Liberty Coalition, but we are pushing out and launching our supporter platform. So we are looking for 8,000 subscribers and contributors monthly. And so we have 4 levels of support. We would love to pull you in. We would love for you to be a partner with us in extending the reach and permanency and the effectiveness of the Liberty Coalition, which includes this podcast, Liberty Dispatch. So, Mike, what's going on with this new initiative?
Well, we're trying to reach some major fundraising goals because, Tim, as you know, you and I have been doing this in our spare time. We're receiving a tremendous amount of positive feedback. There's good momentum. But in a fundraising video that I did recently, I said, we feel like we're scrambling. So if we can reach 7,000 $10 a month supporters, if we can reach $750 a month supporters, if we can reach 350, $100 a month supporters, and if we can just get 20 key stakeholders who are ready to give over $24,000 a year, we are ready and willing to go out and hire 8 full-time staff members to manage our projects and also to really go out and hire some support staff for them. People like Tim Tyso, we would love to be able to pay him for his efforts. So folks, please, if you can get onto our website and just hit the donate button and become a monthly donor, we would greatly appreciate all your contributions. Okay, but that's long enough on me chatting about money. Tim's already bored. Tim, what have we been reading this week? What's in the news?
Right, let's get to it. So the first one, and I feel some spring in me right now. Just take a sip. You're going to need to relax as we get into this one, Mike. Ontario passes a motion to extend their emergency powers this past week until, as you said, December 2021. So we are nearing the 2-year anniversary of the beginnings of the lockdown. At that stage, this is wrong on so many levels. The first one, obviously, that comes to my mind is this is a promise of a continuation of unconstitutional measures. As we've seen, we've documented here and in other places on our platform that these measures of lockdowns they're unconstitutional. In some cases, they're criminal, and they're irresponsible at very best. So this is a promise, and it's a suggestion that this pandemic response is actually going to continue well beyond the summer. And this is all done under the guise and under the covering of the Reopen Ontario Act, which is the worst named piece of legislation probably in Canadian history. And you know, I'm not the first to say that. I'm glad I can make it.
I don't know. It depends. If you named it with the goal of irony and satire in place, like, then it's seriously.
Yes.
Where have all the Canadian stand-up comics been with the Reopen Ontario Act that continues to trounce on fundamental freedoms. I just want to jump in, Tim, on what you said. You repeated a concept we've repeated many times, that these measures are unconstitutional. Family, friends, brothers, sisters, enemies, people who hate liberty, please remember that you have the right to assemble. You have the right to speak. You have the right to conscience. You have the right to a free press without threat of ramifications. You have the freedom of mobility. You have the freedom to leave this country and come back to this country when you choose. Like,
so on that point, Mike, can I just say, I was up in Muskoka this past week and I was working on my deck outside. I had beautiful weather for it. And on the radio, this third lockdown, which ended on June the 2nd, I heard an announcement that the Ford government went ahead and said, okay, so you're now allowed to travel across the province. That part of the lockdown ended where you weren't allowed to travel anymore. And I went in to see my wife and I said, do they know that you're already allowed to travel anywhere you want in this country? We dealt with this in the passport episode. Like, we can go where you can go wherever you want.
Yeah, you absolutely. Can, right? And it just goes back to simplify your point that these are unconstitutional measures. Before we rant and go on too long, look, I want to shout out some very positive people. I want to shout out our friend Randy Hillier, who is one of the great friends of our End the Lockdowns caucus. He's one of the early signatories on that. And he has just been a wonderful friend of liberty. He voted against this, of course. I want to shout out Belinda Karahalios, who has, if you haven't seen her video, her 10-minute video, just click onto YouTube, hit Belinda and COVID-19, whatever. If you haven't seen her most recent video, it is inspiring. Ladies on social media who tend to think I'm a mean person, this is for you, ladies. Like, listen to Belinda. She's so accurate and she assesses the situation perfectly. And then I want to give a shout out to Roman Babber, Roman has done a great job making sure that a lot of the information gets tweeted out. He's, I just want to honor these three people. Randy is officially connected with Liberty Coalition Canada. These other two individuals are not. And I still want to give credit where credit is due. So thank you.
And on that note, I get to do one shout out too. My shout out goes to former Ontario Premier Kathleen Wynne, who went on record against this motion. No. Yes.
Don't you do it.
Here it is. It's done. It's already out there. And so Kathleen headed the party that, in my opinion, fundamentally destroyed this province, or at least drove it pretty deep in the ground following Dalton McGuinty. But this is a great thing. Thank you for voting against this, Kathleen Wynne. All you need to
do is- literally gave a shout out to Voldemort on our podcast. You literally gave a shout out to She Who Shall Not Be Named, sex ed curriculum, yes. Liberal. Look, she did not vote a no against this for any real intention. We know from the polling that most liberals would want to keep us in lockdown forever. She voted knew no because that it was going to pass.
Yes, she knew that if it was worded giving the liberals power indefinitely, she would have voted yes. That's the only reason she voted against it, of course, Mike. Part of the point is here, these MPs are walking a razor's edge of political approval. We know that this is all being done according to polling. If you look at the voting record for this motion, Doug Ford, the Premier of Ontario, the head of this caucus and his party, did not vote for this motion. That's not a coincidence. I mean, this is the most consequential piece of legislation that Ontario has seen. It affects the most broad scope of the population than probably anything passed in the last decade. He didn't vote on it.
It just came up. It just dawned on me. He kicked Belinda.
Yes.
Out. He kicked Mrs. Karahalios out of the party
for failing to vote yes on Bill 195.
Which is, this is just the extension of that.
Yeah,
and so he kicked her out. Yes. And that man
did not vote yes on his own.
Oh, you know
bill.
What? There, look that's, at people. People think that savage. I'm outspoken and that my tone is mean. But do you know how many times I hold off from calling that man names in order to be respectful on this show? Doug Ford, you are duplicit in what you did. How dare you not vote for this, not stand for this, when you have kicked people out of your party
for
voting against it?
That's right.
It just goes to show you that they had the numbers. They had it all orchestrated.
Whatever was
happening, it was still coming down the pike.
Yep.
Which actually, so, I do want to touch on before we move on this. I do want to touch on that if your MPP did not vote, are you being represented? Like a member of provincial parliament is voted into that house, is voted into that building, is voted into that space in order to represent your voice, not to sit around and go, oh, what's going to keep my job with my current politicians? Who's going to organize this? No, they are to be going to their constituents. And we should have seen a massive, did Sam Oosterhoff vote yes or no on that? Or did he abstain? You know, we know his riding would want to be open. There's right. just so many different things that is problematic. These MPPs are no longer actually being representatives of the people. They are being representatives of whatever they are told top down. And that is
so what's
so
more
wrong.
Insidious about this is that they calculated the minimum number of votes that they would need to pass it. And they tapped on the shoulder the MPs whose seats are politically safe in the next election. Anybody who this could chase them down in the next election and say, look, you voted for that bill, and then it would cost them politically, they were allowed to sit out the vote so that they can go back and tell their constituents, we didn't vote to extend the emergency powers. It is utterly dishonest. It's utterly manipulative. And it's purely political. And this, again, with the backdrop of New York, New Jersey, all these states just south of Ontario having fully opened, you know, masks are gone, social distancing is gone, schools are open, concerts, IndyCar races, everything is open. Just they're back to normal. And Canada and Ontario in particular is bracing for what we can only expect is a fourth wave, a fourth lockdown, and likely in this time frame, a fifth. There's no end in sight for us here in Canada.
I would suggest that it's the December 1st, Tim, is just salesmanship, right? So it's a fourth lockdown for the fall. And then it's this brief break of, oh, what do you think? And then, oh, right after Christmas or for Christmas again, we'll shut everything down. I do want to give a shout out to the rest of the provinces. I just got an email today specifically talking about how Saskatchewan is in major lockdown, and it's in lockdown as hard as not quite as hard as Alberta, but it's in major lockdown. And we do expect the other provinces to follow suit based upon what we've seen and been talking to from our End the Lockdowns caucus as we're briefed there. Tim, I want to just point out a few of the specifics on this one.
Yeah, please do.
So while you talk about how New York and some of Democrat states, so we're talking liberally minded states, are more open than conservative premiers are leading conservatives or conservatively trying to conserve our economy. I just want to point out that this is the real problem with these extended orders. So number one, we are on step one, step two, step three of reopening. If you look at the act, I'm on Ontario.ca right now. It is not until 70 or 80% of adults are vaccinated in this country. So we're not talking about deaths. We're not talking about cases. We are talking about medical coercion. Look, if you want to get the vaccine, I'm never going to get this vaccine because people are pushing so hard for it. But that being said, if you want to, go for it. You're a part of a human experiment. I hope that everything is just fantastic for you. And I hope you sign a waiver before you do it because you are technically a part of that. But I want to point out the fact that even if we got to step three, reopen, the heavens have opened. We are expecting an ascension of our bodies to move into the heavens, or we are expecting angels to come and sing. We get to step three. We're expecting like a supernatural experience. And except at step three, we are still talking about restrictions. So I saw a great meme today, a guy moving from a little cage to a cage just bigger, going, yay, yay, freedom, freedom. Step three still has indoor dining capacity limits. Step three still has indoor sports and recreational facilities with capacity limits. Step three, you know, I assume, you know, I don't see it right here, but I assume all of these things are still mask mandates. You know, we still have restrictions, and that's step three. If we're only in step two, we, the church, people who believe in the Lord Jesus Christ, who want to meet together and worship him, we are still in step two, relegated to less than non-essential at 15% capacity.
Yeah. So what you're saying is, at best, this lockdown rubric, which we've already put on the screen, or we'll have this for you, at best, this rubric continues into the winter time until there is snow on the ground again here in Ontario. And that's a best case scenario.
Right. That's so, best case. That's not stepping back into step two. That's not stepping forward into step three. And again, it is all based on coercion. So again, we're not at ICU capacities any longer. We are at flat out, you do what you're told, you dumb person, or you don't get to reopen your businesses.
Yeah. So we got to move on, Mike. We're going to look at a very closely related, these came out the same week, no elections until after the pandemic. This is at a federal level. Mike, can you go ahead and play this, some audio from the motion from the block that was read in the federal House of Commons last week?
Moved that the House remind the government that a general election was held in October 2019, and sadly note that more than 1.3 million Canadians, including almost 360,000 Quebecers, have been infected with COVID-19, and that nearly 25,000 people have died as a result. And B, in the opinion of the House, holding an election during a pandemic would be irresponsible, and that it is the responsibility of the government to make every effort to ensure that voters are not called to the polls as long as this pandemic continues.
So you texted me about this last week saying we got to shoot on this. And I almost just went through the roof. No elections until the pandemic's over. You know, then I got reading this and I thought, okay, well, I guess what they're really talking about here is a minority government, which the Liberal government is in a minority position right now. It's to prevent a minority government from calling a snap election. It's not necessarily about postponing the next regular election, which is scheduled for October 2023, because when you're a minority government, you can call a snap election when your numbers are doing well in the polls to try to capture some of that public support and convert your minority government into a majority. That's the idea of a snap election. So then I kind of was saying, you know, to you, Mike, I don't know, maybe it's not that big a deal. And then when you just listen to that audio, you go, there's so many red flags in there. There's so many red flags. It's irresponsible, and it's the government's responsibility to make sure that citizens don't go to the polls. I mean, that's a quote.
Yeah.
What?
I know you're probably trying to wait and bait me to jump in on this one. Am I allowed to jump now? Like as the temperature of the pool warmed in order for me to get in at 80? Like so there's a few things you gotta understand about this. So I think you're right in some respects that what this is virtue signaling from the Bloc, who have good numbers, to say to Trudeau, you know, hey, don't hold an election this spring. And they'd be happy for Trudeau to follow that. I think the surprise is that the Liberals all, of course, go for it, that the Conservatives go for it, that the NDP go for it, and that there is one member of Parliament, again, an end the lockdowns friend. He's a part of our caucus. What a great guy, Derek Sloan.
If you ever vote again, you can think of the name Derek Sloan.
Let's just okay. Yeah, that's right. If you ever vote again, that's right. You'll remember.
Too far.
Yeah. No, look it. Like I've been so proud of our End the Lockdowns caucus people. Derek has been fantastic. Maxime has just been fantastic throughout this whole thing. Randy, you've got our municipal leaders who have just been awesome. I'm just so concerned about this. So there's a few things that are concerning. Number one, so to your point, snap election, yes, possibly all this did was move the election back from a snap election that could happen in June that nobody wanted maybe to strategically the Bloc and everybody saying, give us some time to get organized. And let's hold it in the fall when the pandemic's over. But that's not what was said. What was said was every single member of Parliament agrees that as long as anybody says the pandemic is going, we think it's irresponsible for free people to elect their representatives. And I want to pause on two thoughts here and then I'll give it back to you, Tim. So number one, everybody who's saying, okay, great. We really will see if this is problematic way out in October of 2023. You're right. We're not going to know whether or not this silly pandemic or another pandemic interferes with our elections.
That's right. We don't know yet.
So it's totally fair. We just don't know. But this is very concerning that members of Parliament would effect due job security. And that's the second point. Talking in the political world this week from a really reliable source, the question was posed to me, well, who wouldn't vote themselves in to having power until an arbitrary definition of pandemic is over?
Expires.
Like,
yeah.
Who wouldn't do that? If you have a job and now there's no question of your job, there's no snap election, there's no short-term election, as long as the narrative is pandemic, you keep your job. Who wouldn't vote for that? And then number two, how does that motivate the government then? It motivates the government just for self-preservation
to extend the pandemic,
which just happened in Ontario at very least until December. So someone says, hey, let's hold an election in the fall. Shouldn't someone in that room put up their hand and say, well, Ontario's still in their emergency orders? Like, the stage is set that whoever calls the shot about the definition of the pandemic calls the shot as to when we go to an election. And if you're still a trusting person, go for it. But there's too many balls rolling down the hill in one direction for me to think, wow, these people are not going to self-preserve. And by the way, why wouldn't they self-preserve when our entire country is divided and angry and frustrated and not knowing what to do?
So, dear listener, are you seeing the big picture here? Are you seeing what Mike just laid out? We have until December, the largest province, the most populous province in the country, Ontario, has extended their emergency powers until December. The federal government has said pandemic is going to be the ultimate decider of the timing of our next election. So we know there will be no election this year, and this is a minority government. So what if the other parties vote to bring down the minority liberals? Because that happens. A vote of non-confidence ultimately brings down the government. So if the liberal government wants to bring forth a bill that's radical, divisive, super ideological, it's de facto has to be passed because of the parliamentary procedures, given that if they're voted against, they fall.
Yeah, especially
so it's
if
built in here,
especially if they make it, especially if they want to push the envelope as a vote of non-confidence.
Exactly right. So if they want to frame it that way, they are handcuffing the rest of the members of parliament by this vote to say, you told us that you would not force an election. Now, by the way, the liberals agree to this because they're already controlling the narrative. They're already passing bills like crazy that are radical, that are ideologically driven, that are progressive, that set fire to the conservative landscape. They're already doing this. So, of course, they voted to extend this. It's horrible.
Actually, I want to talk a little bit about that at the end of our podcast, because this is where folks really need to understand where you, Tim, and I are coming from.
Yeah.
Because
I'll make one last point just before you get to that. And you said it. Who's not going to vote to self-preserve? Justin Trudeau literally is quoted as saying, nobody wants an election in the middle of a pandemic. Very easy for somebody on the inside of the chamber to say that. I'd say there's a lot of folks probably on the outside who, given the opportunity, would love to cast a vote for a new direction, given what's going on here in Canada. So I'm going to let that rest there. It doesn't look good.
Well, and I just want to, we're going to talk about this at the end, but I just want to link the thought. So many people say, why are you talking about this as Christians? Why are you talking about this as pastors? Why are you talking about politics at all? And what we're going to talk about at the end is that these concerns of self-preservation, these concerns of business owners not being able to work, these concerns of the churches not being able to be open, these concerns extend beyond a very narrow vision of what our faith touches. Our faith touches everything. And so Tim and I are concerned that simply selfish people who make great money will continue to say, your ability to reelect me is secondary to my ability to stay in office. And I have the perfect excuse. Canadians have been complicit and compliant with the whole narrative from day one. Even now, I just finished off a conversation with a pastor online saying, I disagree with so many of the measures and so many of the issues, but I still think it's time to wait. I still think, you know, I need to be submissive and I need to not speak out and I don't want to be divisive. Canadians are confused about this. And we're going to talk about it later, but why we're so pumped up is because our freedoms are slowly being infringed upon around arbitrary titles that anybody can manipulate. And on that, this all happens in the backdrop of the Fauci email leak. Right. So this week, Anthony Fauci, you know, Dr. Tony. Fauci,
yeah,
had 900 emails leaked.
Did you say 900? It's 3000. I don't know where you got 900. It's 3000.
Are you calling me a liar right in front of everybody?
Just mistaken.
Okay, that's fair. You could have called me a liar. I'm saved by grace and I have lied many times. On that point, Fauci had over 3,000 emails.
Yeah.
And again, the emails show things like Fauci knew that everybody was concerned that it was leaked from the Wuhan lab. Fauci knew that masks didn't really work, but he flip-flopped on that. He was emailing people privately about that. All of these issues, and our team is we've got some people scrubbing these emails to really pull out some of the most honest pieces of information that we haven't seen yet. But it's because we're seeing tyranny and we're seeing people shape the narrative for their own gain. And so as no election during pandemic is a very concerning thing to a free nation who has peacefully reelected officials time and time again since the beginning of our nation. Okay, topic three. Go for it, Tim.
And our last story here, and again, this ties perfectly into the last one, because one of the reasons Trudeau said we can't have an election right now is, quote, because we need to continue to have a well-functioning parliament so that we can continue to get support out to Canadians, which essentially means writing checks. This dropped just on June the 4th that the new job losses in Canada were triple what they were forecast to be. They expected around 20,000 losses of jobs due to the pandemic restrictions. There were over 68,000 jobs lost in Canada during that same period. And so this is what Trudeau is saying. We need to make sure our parliament is functioning well so that we can take care of Canadians. And this is the bottom line. This is what caring for Canadians looks like. Because again, these lost jobs are a result of government imposed restrictions. They're not a result of, by any study, COVID-19, the actual infection, the actual illness that infects Canadians. This is typical of the government to basically underestimate costs and overestimate delivery.
Ooh, I'm not sure, but did somebody do a podcast about that recently where they understated the costs and overstated the benefits? I'm not sure. This might be a sarcastic question, but somebody might have talked about that recently. And based upon what, a Simon Fraser professor's report?
That's maybe. Right. So, but this is typical of the government, who in a democratic system is vying for your vote. They're going to say, it's not going to be as bad as you think. It's going to be better than you hoped. And invariably, the costs are higher, the expenses are higher, and the delivery is lower. And so it's an activity of diminishing returns, where the more you ask for, the less you get in relation to your expectations. And this is, you know, what a person needs most is a job. Do you know that? I mean, that's basic. As for our psyches, our mental health depends on productive work, serving the Lord with our hands, our minds. It's what puts bread on the table.
Well,
it's what helps in terms of dignity.
Yeah.
What do you got? You gonna challenge me on that?
Who people need most is Jesus. Mm-hmm. Like legitimate faith, forgiveness of their sins.
Spiritualize me. Yes, they do.
But
economically,
yeah,
that's right.
As far as
what the government can do most to help people in terms of economics is to get out of the way and let them go to work.
Yeah, so particularly
that's my takeaway.
Tim, you make a great point, right? Government is not responsible to create jobs. They're responsible from inhibiting jobs, maybe creating certain regulations in order to protect workers and things like that. But they are certainly not there to try to them strategize how to create jobs / them try to how to restrict jobs. And by the way, everybody, just so you know, we've got an interview coming soon with Shalu Prasad. And Shalu and I did an interview this week. She is a wonderful businesswoman of 30 years in the Barrie area. And she has run a number of restaurants and is currently just running one. And we talk about how hard this has been for her as a business owner to keep her employees going and to pay bills and to keep jobs moving forward. And it's a tragic story. I think you should hear it. And again, if you think that being critical of these things is problematic and divisive, you need to understand that these things in and of themselves, these measures are the division.
They are problematic and divisive.
To say people can't get out and work, Tim, that's in itself divisive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to just as we wrap up here, and we have a few closing thoughts here, so, you know, maybe five more minutes here, but the reason we do this podcast, the reason why the Liberty Coalition Canada was founded was so that we could speak to these issues and hopefully equip our listeners with not only the legal ramifications and constructs that our country was built on, the philosophical underpinnings, the constitutional realities, but also to give a theological framework, the fact that even this nation alone is founded under the supremacy of God, underneath the glorious and gracious oversight of the living God and his King, Jesus Christ. And so that's what we're promoting. We do this because we want to help you love your neighbor by living out the law of God in your own life and in the life of your neighbor. And the law of God is the basis for morality. And so what we're doing is saying we are departing from these things. We're departing from a love of neighbor in Canada. And we do believe that the responsibility first lies with the church. There's no coincidence that the Liberty Coalition was founded, I think, almost unanimously by Christian pastors. Because
actually,
we believe in
Christian pastors and Christian businessmen and some Christian lawyers and
Christian people.
There were men and women in the room. It was a great day.
Yeah. And so the idea here that, well, the church should get out of civic life, get out of politics, that is the beginning of the end of public freedom. When the church withdraws its voice from the public square, it is the entrance of what we call tyranny. And what we're seeing now in Canada is the slow seeping in of soft, what they call soft tyranny, soft totalitarianism. We're seeing elections suspended, emergency powers pushed without scientific basis, without consent of the electorate. This is what's happening under our watch right now.
Well, and particularly, Tim, all of these things that we're addressing go back to, am I going to equate justice with right before God, or am I going to create a concept of justice that is right in my own eyes? And we know from Scripture that when the people wanted a king, just like every other nation, that God said, well, if you want a king, that's fine, but you got to know he's going to self-serve. It's going to be expensive. And we also know that our personal faith just does not stay inside. Our personal faith needs to be lived out. So when you say, when we pull back from the public sphere, it's ironic. Christians haven't left the public sphere. There are Christian doctors, there are Christian nurses, there are Christian economists, there are Christian lawyers, there are Christian, you know, you just go down, there are Christian artists, there are all of these things. What has happened is that while they have lived in the public sphere, we have not lived our faith consistently according to the word of God, to the glory of God, trusting God that he will use our voices to shape the nation. So when you have Anthony Fauci telling lies, you know, telling the truth on emails and then telling lies out publicly, it is our Christian responsibility to talk about that. When you have health measures that completely pervert justice to be whatever the whim of the most fearful, loud doctor is, rather than the long-formed case law, the moral law of this country, it's our responsibility to speak to that. We don't just have this little sectional faith that applies, you know, for 15 minutes of the day when we sit and listen to a sermon or we say a specific prayer. Look, I want to quote 1 Corinthians 11. So then, and this is talking about, you know, issues like marriage and issues like payment of people. Do they deserve payment? It's talking about issues like, you know, eating food that, you know, our dietary habits. It's talking about all of these things. And Scripture says, so whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do it all to the glory of God. And in the book of 1 Corinthians, Paul lays out a number of things that are like internal. When you think about these internal church issues, do it to the glory of God, da 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 da. And he also has a whole bunch of issues outside of the church proper where the church is supposed to go and be public and da 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 da, do these to the glory of God. And so we're trying to think politically slash just in the context of liberty to the glory of God. And I want to give, Tim, I know you're giving me the eyes. You're saying, Teason, shut her down, Teason, land the plane. That's what you're saying. Don't talk. I got 2 seconds left. I want to give a major shout out to the Ezra Institute, for Contemporary Christianity. Reverend Dr. Joe Boot, a good friend of mine, I want to say has helped so many people think clearly about some of these issues. His writings are crisp. His writings are closely attached to scripture, and they are really applicable into real life situations. And so I want to shout out to the Ezra Institute. What a great organization. We can't keep going in Canada without you guys. We need the Ezra Institute. And that's free, that's by the right. way. They didn't pay for anything. Joe's work has been fantastic. And the fellows that are there, along with all of the worldview camps that we run, I'm proud to be a part of that organization, because we are missing stuff in the general world of conservatism and evangelicalism when it comes to cultural thinking.
Joe has been a spiritual and philosophical mentor of mine for about 12 years now, and I add my thanks and applause to him and for his courage, especially in the last, well, a year, but really he has spoken against the cultural grain for many years and has shaped many in the church, myself included. So I did want to, again, one last note on the church's involvement. I'm reading a book right now, Live Not by Lies by Rod Dreher. And Mike, I know you've read this book, and I want to share a quote. Because you talk about communism and the seeping of soft totalitarianism where it ended in the 80s, it was what we call hard totalitarianism. There was a Berlin Wall. There was, gulags, and that's hard totalitarianism. And the church in those days spoke against it. And they believed in Christian liberty. And I just want to read to you, in the research for this book, Rod says, in fact, Flag Taylor, an American political scientist who studied the Czech underground, told me that not a single dissident leader he interviewed for his research expected that the fall of communism would happen in their lifetimes. This is why we do this podcast, because we believe that change can happen. Vlado Palko, a Slovak academic who stood on the main square in Bratislava, braving the police water cannons at the candle demonstration, was one of them. He was afraid that night in 1988, which is the year I was born, and he had no reason to believe that the protest called by the underground church, notice that, the underground church called for a protest, would have any effect. But as he told his wife, before leaving his flat for the square, his dignity as a man depended on showing up to stand with his fellow Catholics, candle in hand, to pray openly for freedom. I thought back then that communism would last for the next 1,000 years, he told me. The truth was, it did not. And that is something for us to hope for today. Under this soft tyranny of political correctness, this is in the context of the book, it will end. The truth has power to end every tyranny. That's why we do this. That's why I believe the church is essential. And the voice of the church to articulating a vision for society that is good, not only for the church, but for everybody under the umbrella of that same society. So we do believe in the prayer stated in our national anthem, God keep our land glorious and free. To that end, we will continue broadcasting as long as we can. Mike, thanks for everything today. Listener, thank you for supporting us. Please consider joining as a monthly contributor at whatever level you can. Check out our website and the donate tab to sign up for that. And please continue to join us each week at Liberty Dispatch.
One last note. Keep your ear to the ground for July 1st in Ottawa.
Thanks for tuning in to Liberty Dispatch, working together for liberty and justice in Canada. Please subscribe to our podcast and YouTube channel, as well as visit our website at www.libertycoalitioncanada.com.